Welcome to the deep dive. If you're tackling nursing studies, especially something like pediatric neurology, you know how much information there is. It can feel, well, pretty overwhelming.
It really can.
So think of this deep dive as like cutting through all that. We want to focus on the absolute essential knowledge about key neurological conditions in kids.
Exactly. The stuff you, as a future nurse, really need to get a handle on.
We're looking at insights from a textbook chapter on pediatric neurodisorders and also a practical article about managing seizures in children.
Right. And our mission today is pretty straightforward. Give you a clear, concise overview of these conditions. We'll hit the key nursing care points, the why behind them, so you feel more prepared.
Think of it as building that solid foundation.
Precisely. You'll build your clinical skills on top of this.
Okay, so let's jump right in with something pretty common: seizure disorders. Our sources make a point right away about the difference between just a seizure and epilepsy.
Yeah, that's fundamental. A seizure is basically a sudden, uncontrolled electrical storm in the brain. Can look like almost anything, really.
From subtle zoning out to, major convulsions.
Exactly. But epilepsy is different. It's a specific diagnosis.
Which requires.
It's defined as having two or more unprovoked seizures, and they have to be at least 24 hours apart.
Unprovoked being the key word there.
Absolutely. Meaning they aren't triggered by some immediate known cause, like a high fever or a head injury right then and there.
Okay. And the sources break down seizure types.
They do. First, you've got epileptic seizures. Those are classified by where they start. Generalized seizures involve, like, both sides of the brain right from the get-go.
Okay.
Then, partial or focal seizures start in just one specific area, usually the cortex, that outer layer.
Got it.
And then, really important for peds nurses are febrile seizures. These are triggered by a rapid spike in temperature, usually in kids under five.
Right, the fever itself causes it. And then
Yeah.
there's looks like status epilepticus in big letters here.
Yes. And that means emergency. You need to act fast.
Okay, define that for us.
Status epilepticus is either a single seizure that goes on for longer than 5 minutes, or it's having more than one seizure within a 5 minute window without the child returning to their normal level of consciousness between them.
5 minutes, that's the magic number to remember there.
It's a critical threshold, yes.
Yeah.
Recognizing it and intervening immediately is a huge part of your nursing role.
The sources also mention non-epileptic seizures. Why is that distinction important for a nursing student?
Oh, it's crucial. Because with non-epileptic seizures, there is an identified cause. We're talking things like a recent head injury, maybe an infection, certain medications, lack of oxygen,
Hypoxia, right.
hypoxia, or even a structural issue in the brain itself. Finding that trigger is key to treatment.
So picture this. You're the nurse, a child starts seizing. What are the absolute must-do assessments according to our sources?
Okay, first, observation and documentation are huge. What's their level of consciousness? Were they acting differently beforehand? Any aura reported?
Like a warning sign.
Exactly. Some people get a sensory warning. Then time it. How long did the seizure actually last? Very important. Check their airway. Is it clear? Are they breathing okay?
What about incontinence?
Yes. Note that too. And then critically, observe the postictal phase. That's the period right after the seizure. How are they acting? Sleepy? Confused? Agitated.
Okay, assessment covered. Now, immediate interventions during the seizure.
Priorities are ongoing neuro checks. Keep an eye on respiratory status and heart function, so cardiovascular monitoring. And of course, safety. Make sure they don't get hurt. Then postictal care afterwards.
The sources seem to really zero in on a couple of things here.
They do. Two things really stand out for nursing students.
Yeah.
First, airway. Always, always airway.
Why is that such a high risk?
Well, during or after a seizure, there's a real risk of vomiting or just having lots of oral secretions. That can easily lead to aspiration blocking their airway. So job one is making sure they can breathe.
Makes sense. And the second thing.
Safety. During a seizure, the child has zero control over their body. Protecting their head and neck is vital. The sources mention padding side rails, maybe with pillows.
But there's a caveat there, right?
Yes, very important point. You need a specific doctor's order to put side rails up as a preventative measure for patients known to have seizures. It's not automatic.
Good clarification. What about diagnostic tests? What might we see ordered?
The main one is usually an EEG, an electroencephalogram.
Measuring brain waves.
Right. It looks for abnormal electrical patterns that suggest seizures. The sources also kind of nudge you to think about cardiovascular effects. It doesn't go deep, but it's a reminder that seizures can impact heart rate, blood pressure.
So monitor vitals closely.
Definitely.
Okay, let's shift gears now. Structural defects. What kind of conditions are we talking about here?
These are issues with how the brain and spinal cord actually form, usually during pregnancy. The textbook excerpt we looked at highlights neural tube defects, Chiari malformation, and hydrocephalus.
Let's start with neural tube defects. The notes list a few.
Yeah, things like spina bifida, encephaly, encephalocele, microcephaly, they're all under that umbrella. The source dives a bit deeper into myelomeningocele.
Which is a severe form of?
Spina bifida, yes. It's quite serious.
Why is it so serious? What happens?
The myelomeningocele, the spinal cord itself, and the membranes around it actually push out through an opening in the baby's backbones, the vertebrae.
Wow.
Yeah. And this almost always causes significant problems. Paralysis, loss of feeling below that spot, major issues with bowel and bladder control. It needs surgery to close it up.
An infection must be a huge risk.
Huge risk, especially meningitis. Very critical post-op care.
What about the others listed? Anencephaly.
Anencephaly is, sadly, a condition where large parts of the brain and skull don't develop. Encephalocele is where brain tissue bulges out through an opening in the skull. And microcephaly is having a significantly smaller head than normal, which usually indicates the brain hasn't developed properly either.
Okay. Then we have hydrocephalus. This sounds like another really critical one for nursing students.
Absolutely. Hydrocephalus is basically a plumbing problem in the brain. Too much cerebrospinal fluid, CSF, builds up in the ventricles, those fluid-filled spaces.
And that causes...
increased intracranial pressure, ICP, which is dangerous. Our source stresses that this usually needs surgery, typically putting in a shunt.
Like a drain.
Essentially, yes. Yep. A tube system to drain the extra fluid away from the brain and relieve that pressure.
What causes hydrocephalus in kids?
It could be congenital, meaning they're born with it due to how they develop, or it can be acquired later, maybe from an infection during pregnancy or after birth, from things like head injuries, brain tumors, or infections like meningitis.
So as a nurse caring for a child with hydrocephalus, what are those red flags for increased ICP you need to watch for?
Okay, signs depend a bit on age, but our source lists key things. In babies, look for bulging fontanelles, those soft spots on the head. Also, their head circumference might be increasing rapidly.
What about older kids?
They might become lethargic, really irritable, maybe lose their appetite, cry inconsolably, vomit. Sometimes they get what's called sunset eyes.
Sunset eyes.
Yeah, where their eyes seem to be looking downwards. And you see the white part, the sclera above the iris. And seizures can definitely be a sign of rising ICP too.
So pulling it together for hydrocephalus, key nursing interventions.
Like with any neuro condition, really close monitoring. Frequent neuro checks, vital signs, airway is always key. Safety is crucial, especially if they're having seizures or their consciousness is affected.
And medications.
Right. The medications we talked about with seizures might be used here too, like benzodiazepines or antiepileptics, requiring careful administration and watching for effects.
The sources also give a quick mention to craniosynostosis and positional plagiocephaly. Quick definitions.
Sure. Craniosynostosis is when the fibrous joints, the sutures, in an infant's skull close up too early. Normally, they stay open so the brain can grow.
So premature closing messes up skull shape.
Exactly. And potentially restricts brain growth. Can happen on its own, or sometimes it's part of a genetic syndrome.
And plagiocephaly.
Positional plagiocephaly is much more common, usually harmless. It's just a flattening of the head, often the back, from how the baby lies, like always sleeping on their back. It doesn't affect the brain, usually gets better with repositioning.
Okay, last major area, head trauma. This is a big deal in pediatrics, isn't it?
Huge. Unfortunately, head injuries are a major cause of death and long-term disability in kids, especially after they turn one and start moving around more.
Our materials mention different kinds of injuries. Can you break those down?
Yeah. A concussion is the most common. It's a traumatic brain injury. And really important note, repeat concussions before the first one heals are incredibly dangerous, can even be fatal.
Okay, good warning. What else?
A contusion is basically a bruise on the brain tissue itself. Then you have hematomas, which are bleeds. Subdural is between the brain and its outer covering, the dura. Epidural is between the dura and the skull.
And what typically causes these injuries in kids?
Falls are super common, especially for toddlers. Car accidents, whether the child's inside or hit as a pedestrian or cyclist, are another major cause.
And sadly?
Sadly, non-accidental trauma. Shaken baby syndrome or an infant's head being hit against something.
Yeah.
Devastating causes.
The sources also mention skull fractures. Are there specific signs nurses should look for?
Yes. Fractures can be linear, just a crack. Depressed, where the bone pushes inward. Basilar, at the base of the skull, or compound, where there's an open wound down to the bone or brain.
Any telltale signs for basilar fractures?
Yeah, those have classic signs. Raccoon eyes, which is bruising around both eyes. Battle sign, bruising behind the ear, sometimes blood behind the eardrum. Or CSF, or blood leaking from the nose or ears.
And if there's any chance of a neck injury?
Immobilization is key. They'll likely use a cervical collar, like a Miami J, until the spine is cleared. And always remember, your neuro assessment has to fit the child's age. You assess an infant differently than a teenager.
Right. So diagnosis and management for head trauma, what's the approach?
Diagnosis is based on how the child looks clinically, that neuro exam, and importantly, the mechanism of injury, what actually happened.
And treatment.
Can range. For a mild concussion, maybe just watchful waiting at home with careful instructions for parents. For more severe injuries, it's immediate spinal immobilization. Maybe imaging like CT scans.
And in the hospital?
Constant monitoring is the name of the game. Neural status checks, vital signs, watching their fluid intake and output. Often, keeping the head of the bed elevated, maybe 30 degrees, to help manage pressure inside the skull.
And always watching for those signs of increased ICP we talked about with hydrocephalus?
Always. Vigilance is key.
Okay, so let's try and recap this for all the nursing students listening. We've covered a lot. We started with seizure disorders, the difference between a seizure and epilepsy, those key nursing actions like airway and safety.
Right, and the different types, including febrile and status epilepticus.
Then we moved into structural defects. Talked about neural tube defects like myelomeningocele and the big one, hydrocephalus, focusing on managing that increased intracranial pressure.
And we briefly touched on craniosynostosis too.
Exactly. And finally, head trauma. Different types like concussions, contusions, hematomas, skull fractures.
Common causes, including non-accidental trauma, and the core nursing management principles assessment, monitoring, ICP vigilance.
Yeah, and I think what strikes me is how, as you said earlier, some symptoms overlap. A kid with hydrocephalus might have seizures.
Absolutely. It really drives home the need for sharp assessment skills and thinking about the whole picture in pediatric neurology. It's not always siloed.
So for you nursing students listening, really think about this. You're going to be the ones right there. Your sharp eyes, your quick actions during a seizure, how carefully you monitor that child with potential ICP issues, your understanding of head trauma, it all makes a huge difference.
A profound difference, truly, to the child and their family.
So maybe reflect on what we discuss. What parts feel most complex or maybe most interesting to you right now? Are there specific conditions you want to dig deeper into? Think about those age-specific assessments too.
Yeah, that foundational knowledge you're building right now. It's absolutely vital for the kind of skilled, compassionate care these kids need. Keep asking questions. Keep learning.